Welcome back inside the Kentucky Derby. 4 days ago, I sat in this very same spot and looked over at Darren Rodgers, and I could not wait for last weekend's series of four prep races on the road to the Kentucky Derby. And I sit here today thinking, what in the world just happened?
How things change in a mere 96 hours.
I mean, we've said it on this podcast, the twists and turns and the drama of the road to the Kentucky Derby are never ending. I was not expecting what we saw on Saturday in the term of scratches on the road to the Kentucky Derby, but here we are and things change, but you know, we're here to talk about all of that and more.
Well, not just scratches, but significant scratches that, you know, altered the race shape, the star power, the attractiveness of the betting, in nearly every prep race. So yeah, it was a little different. You know, if we call this the roller coaster, you know, the sports filled with ups and downs, we're on that downside right now, but we're going up.
Yeah.
But we can tell you what we saw.
Absolutely. Let's start.
Or what we think we saw.
Right. Exactly. Let's start down south at the Fountain of Youth, which changed dramatically with the scratch of Locked in the Morning and then the scratch of Speakeasy in the post parade leading up to the gate, which led Dornock to be the absolute biggest favorite. And here was Pete Aiello's stretch call of the Fountain of Youth.
To the top of the stretch, it's a confident Luis Saez on big favorite Dornock. He's inside a quarter of a mile from home and in front. Le Dame Bro fighting as hard as he can, trying to stick with him. Three back to Frankie's Empire, and they're at the top of the stretch. It's Dornock asked to finish the job at the inside. Le Dame Bro running his heart out, but he's back to second as Dornock is too much horse. Dornock clear with a 16th to go. The Fountain of Youth Stakes goes to Dornock. Dornock passes the seasonal debut test and wins. Close for second, Le Dame Bro or Frankie's Empire. Real Macho is fourth in 143-3.
And Pete was right. He did pass the seasonal debut of Dornock. But Darren, this race changed completely in the morning when Locked was scratched, and then about 8 minutes to post when Locked stablemate was scratched as well. So it left Dornock to defeat Le Dame Bro. He had to start somewhere to win his three-year-old campaign, but this was very different than I thought, than we both expected.
Yeah, I mean, in the scratch of Speakeasy in the post parade, who, by the way, did receive some cuts, get some stitches, and that'll take at least a week out of his training. They're even considering him to be sent to Windstar Farm for a trip to the hyperbaric chamber, which would accelerate the healing process. So he may be off for, you know, at a minimum a week, maybe 2 weeks. And that's not ideal this time of year, but Speakeasy looked to be the speed on paper, and Dornock was probably going to track the pace setter, relax and have that. I saw in post-race comments that Danny Gargan, the trainer, ran down to Luis Saez in advance of the race and said, just go. I mean, look, it was reduced, you know, to a very compact field of five. The Fountain of Youth, I renamed the Little Spout of Youth. it was just, it wasn't much of a race. I mean, we're not going to remember Le Dame Bro, you know, the great stretch run with Dornock and LeBron Bro next year, let alone maybe next week.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and Le Dame Bro is not Triple Crown nominated, nor was Frankie's Empire, who finished third. Both of those are kind of, I call them house horses. They're based down there in South Florida, and they probably were in that field to, you know, help it be a little more attractive from a betting standpoint. And, they end up running 2-3 in there with Real Macho and Dancing Group there. Look, visually, it was just not that impressive. But again, it is the first race back, so we can't hold it entirely against Dornock. But if you're a fan of Dornock going into this race and going into the three-year-old campaign, I don't think you're quite as confident as you were in him prior to the race.
No, I wouldn't think so. And, you know, we talked a little bit too about Sierra Leone when he made his debut for his 3-year-old season in the Risen Star, and the figure did not come back all that fast. He doesn't need, Dornock doesn't need to run, you know, a 100 Brisnet speed rating, right? He's, correct. You know, he's getting to a starting point. He will have his second start. They planned this all along. Danny Gargan has said, you know, he's had horses on the road to the Kentucky Derby. He ran tax, back in the 2019 Kentucky Derby. So he's used to having horses on the trail, and he planned two races until the Derby. And so this was starting point A. The Bluegrass or the Florida Derby will be starting point B, and then of course the Kentucky Derby. And so he obviously, you know, he progressed in Danny Gargan's eyes. Danny seemed pleased with things, and the figures standpoint came back slow, but it didn't need to come back all that fast for him to, you know, maybe wow his supporters.
I'd love to see this race a little differently when, you know, LaDombro, who was 25-1 in the short field, you know, he broke out on top going into that first turn. He actually had the advantage on Dornock, and he let him go.
Yeah.
If I'm a big price, man, I want to just take it to him and see if I can break their heart.
And then Real Macho, you know, we saw that, you know, huge stretch run in his allowance race last time against, you know, just some subpar competition. He's right up there on the pace too. Like it was just a weirdly run race, especially early on, but that was the Fountain of Youth, the starting point for Dornock, and we'll see him next in about 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, expect him in either the Florida Derby or the Bluegrass Stakes, and I do have a spur of the moment. Top five Dornock tidbits.
Oh, this is great. Dornock tidbits. I was not expecting this.
No, I knew you were not.
Here we go.
So Dornock is actually a town in Scotland.
Okay.
So let's learn about this town. Number five, Dornock is Gaelic for pebbly place, which suggests the area contained pebbles the size of a fist.
Whoa.
That were used as weapons. Huh. And anyway, it was first discovered in about the 12th century. Number four, it is the home of the Royal Dornock Golf Club, which was named as the fifth best golf course outside the U.S. in 2005. By Golf Digest, I have not seen any rankings in the last 19 years. Also, Tom Watson as an honorary member there. Number three, Dornock is the home and birthplace of golf course designer Donald Ross.
Sure.
Donald Ross, he did design. He's one of the most famous golf designers ever. He designed about 400 courses between 1900 and 1948. He died at the age of 75. Was an apprentice to old Tom Morris at Royal St. Andrews, and he finished tied for fifth in the 1903 U.S. Open.
Wow. Who won that U.S. Open?
I'll get back to you on that. Number two, top five Dornock tidbits. It was the last place a witch was burned in Scotland.
Wow.
Janet Horn, she was tried and condemned to death in 1727.
Jeez.
Okay. And number one, in 2000, this mega pop star had her son Rocco christened in the Dornock Cathedral on the day before her wedding to director Guy Ritchie. We're speaking of the great Madonna.
No way.
Those are your top five Dornock tidbits. Look, I learned more about the town of Dornock than I did the running of the little spout of youth. There you go.
How do we transition from that? Wow.
We're here to entertain.
Yes, we are. We saw we're going to talk about, you know, everything about these prep races and more.
By the way,
inside the Kentucky Derby.
Continuing on with a couple other tidbits. I'm not related Dornock? To Dornock, but to the race. Locked, who scratched out of there, galloped on Sunday. Not where Todd Pletcher wants him, but he was more impressed. He's not ruling out a start in Saturday's Tampa Bay Derby. We talked about Speakeasy and the Stitches, and Victory Avenue was scratched out of there because he was quiet and, you know, wasn't eating on Saturday morning. So the connections, Gustavo Delgado and OGMA Investments at all, they decided to be cautionary and scratch him out of the race. So we'll see if he resurfaces.
I typically don't have problems eating, so that's good news there. So that was the Fountain of Youth. Let's go back up north to Aqueduct, where the Gotham Stakes run at the one turn mile, where Just a Touch was supposed to be all that in a bag of chips, and he was not. As the sloppy racetrack and the weather at Aqueduct made a very interesting running of the Gotham, which was upset by the comebacking Deterministic. And here was Chris Griffin's call.
6-3 for the half mile time, 1:10-4 for three quarters. El Grandeo has got the lead in the Gotham. It's El Grandeo out in the center of the racetrack. Maximus Meridius is battling on, chasing his Deterministic in between horses. El Grandeo, but here comes Deterministic in full gear down towards the inside and takes the lead. It's Deterministic who's in front, is up by a length and a half, Just a Touch into second. Deterministic wins the Gotham.
Deterministic, who has not been seen since August at Saratoga, was on Darren Rogers' radar for a while. And did you get down on Deterministic at all in the race?
No, I didn't. Not at, 7-2 was tough asking off the layoff. I was on, Just a Touch. I thought he was going to be, we talked about it. We thought he's all that in a bag of chips. Yep. Going into the race. Deterministic, I mean, we did talk about it on the preview. He's always intrigued me. I thought he was the most impressive juvenile winner at Saratoga last summer. But the question marks was, who did he beat? Well, he missed time with an ankle chip. He's coming back here, with a start in the 1 mile Gotham, going up against a potential freak. He didn't show much speed leaving the gate out of his debut at Saratoga. He was much more forward in the Gotham. I thought for Deterministic to do what he did off the long, long layoff, what was it, August the 27th at, yep, Saratoga, following surgery, and to come back and beat a field that, it was mixed between some Derby prospects, which I do think finished in the top three, mm-hmm, versus, some milers or sprinters that could end up in a race like the Pat Day Mile. I thought Deterministic was absolutely sensational in here. He's going to be shipped back to Payson Park, and Christoph Clement, who, by the way, it does amaze me, as good of a trainer as Christoph Clement is, to think that he's never had a horse in the Derby just amazes me. Mm-hmm. But this could be his first starter, and they're going to take a look at races like the Florida Derby, the Wood, the Bluegrass, the Arkansas Derby. And we'll see how he goes. Just a Touch. Everybody was expecting a lot, and we put a lot of pressure on young horses, thinking that they're potential freaks. But if you take this in, a little bit of a step back, and for a horse making its second lifetime start against, some accomplished horses, not the strongest field, over a muddy track, going one turn, when a horse that we believe, or the connections believe, probably will excel better around two as the distances get longer, I thought it was a fine effort. I expected him to go by. Doorknock was rallying as well, but I expected him to really go by, because Just a Touch had a perfect trip, but he kind of looked like he was spinning his wheels a little bit. And maybe it was the surface, even though he broke his maiden in the slop at Fairgrounds. But I'm not as down on Just a Touch as some other colleagues I've had conversations with. It's not the way you want to see a short price favorite run. You expect him to win in that scenario. But I thought it was fine. And then El Grandeo in third, this horse just competes. He likes to compete. He likes to be in the hunt. He's an overachiever in my eyes. He's garnering points to climb up that leaderboard and maybe, get a spot if he finishes in the top couple positions in his next start. Might even just have to finish in the top five to be in there. And then, Maximus Meridius, I thought was okay too, shipping in from Parks.
Yeah. I talked to Florent Giroux this morning about Just a Touch. And I said, was it the track? Was it the distance? Was it both? And he said, no, it's probably just going to be better with distance. He just needs some more experience. He was running in spots. I think he'll handle two turns next time. I'm a lot better. So there was Flo's thoughts on that.
It sounds like they're going to stay up at Belmont to train and continue preparations up there. I know Brad Cox has the ability to make some audibles, but if they're leaving him there, my thought is he's probably going to come back and run in the Wood Memorial. But that's purely a guess on my part. Try not to, you know, ship this young horse all over so early.
Yeah, I think it's between the Wood and the Bluegrass is just sort of how it is. And Brad has the ability to, you know, sort of play things by ear and how the horse works over the next, you know, two works before his next start. And so probably will be off this weekend and then he'll come back and work the following Saturday. We'll see where he ends up from there. That was the Gotham. And then on Saturday night, as we go in chronological order, in the John Battaglia Memorial, Epic Ride was the heavy favorite in there. And he ended up getting upset by Encino, who broke from the 12 hole, found a absolute perfect trip under Axel Concepcion, another winner for the Brad Cox camp. And here was Tony Kalo's call.
Epic Ride is closing in 3 deep. And Encino begins to gather momentum. He gets within 2.5 legs. Here's Epic Ride to tackle Bolt at Midnight. Blue Eye George is all in. Encino makes a move for third from the outside. Epic Ride has come away with the lead. Here comes Encino to the outside. Blue Eye George is trying to fight on. Bolt at Midnight from the inside. A final furlong to run. And the John Battaglia Memorial. Epic Ride. Encino is testing him. Blue Eye George from the rail. Here comes Encino. Encino wins the John Battaglia Memorial. Epic Ride second, Blue Eye George third, then Magatu.
That was the Battaglia, and Tony was very pumped up, and I loved it.
I love Tony Kalo's calls.
Yeah, he's great. Epic Ride, who was, trying the longer distances as he has sort of, you know, progressed from the 6 furlong, 6.5 to the mile, now a mile and a 16th, just second best in a wild Tapita stretch drive at Turfway Park that seemed to be race in and race out up there.
Yeah, I wasn't too keen on Encino in the preview podcast. He just broke his maiden. I fully expected him to draw away more than he actually did, but I thought he was uber professional in the John Battaglia. I thought that was a very nice victory over Epic Ride. Those are two very nice horses, two horses that are going to be serious contenders in the Jeff Ruby. The thing I keep every time I hear Encino and you know, Tony Kalo calling him down the stretch, and I look at the past performances, I see Encino, and then I see Godolphin named the horse, or Godolphin owns the horse and bred the horse, and I find it very hard to believe the only Encino that I know of is the neighborhood in the San Fernando Valley outside of L.A. Kind of, you know, the old days of the 80s, the Valley Girls with it's Encino. And so I'm very intrigued. Shake Mo, does he have an infatuation with the Valley Girls?
Maybe,
I got no idea.
Maybe. I don't think we'll be able to call him and ask him, but you never know.
No, I don't think I'm going to get an answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know if either of those top two are headed back to the Jeff Ruby. Encino, maybe. Epic Ride could possibly try the Dirt and the Bluegrass next. Okay. We'll see. If you're a weight guy, Encino carried 6 less pounds than Epic Ride. And I know John Ennis is a weight guy, and he thought that might have been the doing ends of Epic Ride, but he thought he ran well in defeat, and we'll have to see where they both end up next. And then the scratches continued on Sunday, Darren, out west in the San Felipe, where Nisos was supposed to be the 1-5 heavy choice in that race. And trainer Bob Baffert said that he is going to skip that race and end up running him in the Santa Anita Derby, possibly, which left him 2 others in that race. And then up finishing 1-2 in Imagination and Wind Me Up.
Yeah, I heard a number of, people discussing, why does Niso scratch out of here? Why does he wait? Look, the fact that the Baffert horses are not eligible for the Derby, they're going to be targeting the Preakness in the long run. That gives him the ability to use the Santa Anita Derby and have, 6 weeks until the Preakness. And you don't have to run he can run a big race and have the ability to recover. I've also heard some conspiracy theories. You enter Nisos knowing you're never going to run him at any point in time. You make the race go, you scare others off. But in reality, what are you scaring out in California? Baffert's got all the top horses, right?
I couldn't think of any others that would probably be waffling to, you know, enter the race and be scared off because of Nysos. So I don't know.
Look, it didn't hurt because Bob ran 1-2 with Imagination and Wind Me Up. They both ran very well. They went, you know, ding-donged throughout, took the lead, asserted themselves. I was expecting Scatify, you know, breaking from the rail to show a little more pace. I was also thinking McVeigh, as the distances get longer, might be able to compete. But Imagination and Wind Me Up are just much the best. Maybe McVeigh, as the distances, you know, increase, he gets more up and close and into the race, much like who was the other the John Sheriff's horse that lumbered home a year ago.
Yep.
Into third. He kind of reminds me of him, where maybe as the distances get a little longer, because this horse is still a maiden. And the fact that a conservative trainer like John Sheriff's, you know, continues on with this horse. But look, we might not have a horse from California in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. I mean, really, because you think of Stronghold, who outside of trainer Bob Baffert's three-year-olds out there, based in California, he's the most impressive three-year-old at this stage out there. And Phil D'Amato has said that he's, you know, shopping his options around where to run him next. So,
yeah, because you, I mean, do you want to run against a Nysos?
Yeah.
But we'll see. Look, again, I've said it all along. I want to see this horse be as dynamic. And I'm speaking of Nysos. I want to see this horse be as dynamic going 9 furlongs as he has, you know, at 6, 7, and 8. No denying 6, 7, and 8, but let's see what he does as the distances get longer.
Yeah. And, you know, the scratches in the road of the Kentucky Oaks, that's the buzzword of the day, scratches. Just FYI, who was the champion filly heading back in the Devono Dale, she ended up scratching with a fever. Bill Mott said, you know, she could end up in anywhere of 3 places next. She, just a minor issue, he said, and should be back into training in no time, but, she'll probably, you know, be into the Gulfstream Park Oaks, Fantasy, or the Ashland were the 3 races that, she was targeting next after missing the Devono Dale.
Well, the Devono Dale was won by Fiona's Magic, you know, with a good stretch battle with Into Champagne. Those top 2 horses ran okay. The favorite, Leslie's Rose, disappointed to run third up at Aqueduct and the Busher. Jody's Pride was a convincing winner of the 1 mile race up there at Aqueduct. And then, you know, the Cincinnati Trophy up on Friday night at Turfway, Maxa Superfly posted a 23-1 front running upset over Barbara Tina in that affair. Look, all those performances were just okay. But to me, the 3-year-old filly that you need to keep your eye on ran on Sunday at Oaklawn Park. Impel for trainer Brad Cox, you know, was forward and rolled to an 8.5 length victory in an allowance race for non-winners of one other than the mile and a 16th. I've been kind of waiting for someone in the 3-year-old filly division to take a step forward, and Impel, a daughter of Quality Road out of the flatter mare Your Love, might just be it. It's a homebred for Judmont, and she was very, very impressive as the favorite. She paid $440 if you were on her, and I fully expect her to be a serious, serious contender on the road to the Longines Kentucky Oaks.
Yeah, scratched out of the Cincinnati Trophy on Saturday and ended up down there at Oaklawn. So maybe, you know, one to keep an eye on in the Cox camp. I would have loved to have seen her at Turfway, but she would have probably been, she probably still would have won that race on Friday night in the Cincinnati Trophy, but scratched her because she broke from that far outside in that allowance race, ended up going down at Oaklawn Park. Darren, did we see any other 3-year-olds? I think there was one from the Pletcher camp on Saturday at Gulfstream to keep an eye on for one more race on the championship series.
Yeah, you're speaking of BU from the Rapoli stable, who you know, was a maiden while running fourth in the Hopeful and third in the American Pharoah. This was the third maiden special weight try since those stakes engagements. Finally got the job done going 7 furlongs and did it in fast fashion under Arad Ortiz Jr. It's a son of Curland out of a congrats mare with Mike Rapoli owning the horse. You know, the horse is going to get a shot to run somewhere. You would think, you know, maybe, you know, I wouldn't even be surprised. maybe they don't try the Road to the Derby. Maybe this is a horse that shows up on the Gotham undercard. I mean, the Gotham undercard, the Wood Memorial undercard in a race like the Bayshore, using it as a stepping stone to the Pat Day Mile. But it was an impressive effort nonetheless, you know, defeating Big City and Jefferson Street. Jefferson Street was going off as the favorite. On the European road to the Kentucky Derby, I'm not expecting any participants from Europe. Bergamasco upset the field and won the Patton Stakes. Going back to Florida on Friday, Conquest Warrior was a nice five-length winner of the first level allowance race. Merritt, of course, was second. He was entered in the Fountain of Youth, scratched out of there to run in the mile and eighth allowance. Conquest Warriors, you know, figures basically matched his maiden special weight, so he didn't necessarily take a step forward, but I would expect him to resurface in the March the 30th Florida Derby. And then a question, do we get to see Time for Truth in the March 30th Arkansas Derby? He was an impressive winner on Saturday of an allowance race. You know, he broke his maiden in very fast fashion, going six furlongs, came back in the Ozark, was beaten by Valentine Candy, running second. Now he stretches out for the first time. It's a modest figure, nothing to really write home about to get you overly excited. But, you know, Ron's described this horse, Ron Moquette, his trainer, has described him as kind of a bigger and more athletic far right. So maybe we get to see him in the Arkansas Derby. And that was about it from what we saw over the weekend.
Yeah, I'll go back to BU real fast. Todd Pletcher said that maybe the Wood could be an option for him, giving him a shot at two turns again. He said if that doesn't work, May can go back to sprinting as we saw. He said he wasn't sure if the 7/8 was a difference or what was, but May be able to look for him in the Wood Memorial on April the 6th. The Tampa Bay Derby will be the feature on next Saturday on the Lone Championship Series on the Road to the Kentucky Derby. Maybe Locked will be in there. A couple of others that are possible. No More Time, Domestic Product, and Maiden Winners Drip and Heartened. That race will be drawn on Wednesday.
Well, I'll look forward to seeing Drip if he shows up in there, to see if a very fast maiden winner that's not nominated the Triple Crown. They're probably checking to test the waters there. I like that.
Yeah, test the waters. And then, you know, if he ends up working out well, there's $6,000 that you need to pay for the late nomination due April the 1st. But again, that'll be on Thursday. We'll talk about all that Wednesday for the entries on the Tampa Bay Derby.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends, and then give us 5 stars for our 4-star performance.
I just can't wait for Darren's top 5 on the Tampa Bay Derby podcast. That'll come on Thursday.
We'll come up with something.
Yeah. Until then, make sure you keep drinking your Woodford Reserve with 200 flavor notes in every sip. Woodford Reserve is a spectacle for the senses. Please enjoy responsibly. That was the recap. You can check out all the information that the Kentucky Derby has to offer on KentuckyDerby.com or follow at Kentucky Derby on all your favorite social media channels. We'll talk again on Thursday and preview the Tampa Bay Derby.